Dr. Jim Stanford is the Director of the Centre for Future Work at the Australia Institute, and he joins me on the line now. G'day, Jim.
Hello, Alan.
Thanks for your time. Is the traditional full-time job, now a full-time job, I'm talking about, you know, something with regular super, paid sick leave, superannuation and holidays, is that becoming a thing of the past?
Well, it's not a thing of the past, but now it is the minority. We kind of crossed that threshold last year, Alan. That traditional job, think of a permanent year-round full-time job, paid wages, and the normal entitlements, as you mentioned, superannuation leave and so on. That was the traditional idea of what a job should be. And as of last year, it's now less than 50% of employed Australians have a job like that. The rest are all experiencing one degree or another of insecurity in their work.
So more than 50% are now experiencing part-time, irregular, casual hours, contract work and so forth. That has become the new norm.
In a way, that's exactly right. Now, there's a number of different things going on there. It's not any one form of those insecure work that kind of took over. It's all of them together chipping away at the traditional idea of a job on all sides. And because of that, now it's the minority that have the security that once came with a normal job.
What brought this change about, John? Is this sort of illustrative of the fact that the unions are holding less power in Australia now?
I think that is one of the features. I also think another reason is the erosion of some of the traditional labor regulations on the part of the government and the Fair Work Commission and so on that used to sort of require employers to meet a certain standard. Employers have also used a lot of creativity, I think, to try and access their labor power in a flexible, kind of just-in-time basis. Employers are very reluctant to offer someone a permanent job now. They're more likely to offer a few hours of work here or a temporary contract there, or even use things like independent contracting or gig work now with the platforms, the digital platforms, to technically avoid becoming an employer at all. And all of those strategies are helpful for businesses to avoid some of the risks and costs that come with employment. On the other hand, it means for workers and their families, they don't have hours or income that they can count on.
I'm just looking at your report. It suggests that a lot of this happened with coincided with the end of the so-called mining boom that we never actually experienced in South Australia. But the mining boom did have a lot to do with it, didn't it, nationwide?
I think during the hot years of the mining boom in the mid-2000s, when the labour market in most parts of Australia was quite tight, I think that sort of some supply and demand factors masked that longer-run structural change in the nature of employment. So if they wanted to find labor when workers were scarce, employers had to offer a better arrangement. They had to offer decent wages and decent security. So for a few years, it looked like the quality of work was getting better. But once the mining boom peaked and things really softened after 2012, then that longer-run structural trend reasserted itself. And in all of the 11 measures of job insecurity that our report looked at, things have become significantly worse in the last 5 years.
How are younger workers to get the appropriate experience and improve themselves under this new regime they find themselves staring down the barrel of?
Yeah, Alan, they're really in a catch-22 position, aren't they? Because, you know, they apply for one of those scarce permanent job, and they're told that they don't have a chance because they don't have any experience. But how are they supposed to get the experience? I kind of think of young people as really the shock troops of this new precarious labor market. They're the ones who are set in first to confront the reality that employers don't want permanent workers for the most part anymore. And for those of us that were lucky enough to have a permanent job, you know, we've managed to get through, but young people trying to find their first foothold in the labor market, they have to confront this reality harder. So barely one-third of workers under 30 in Australia have got a full-time job of any sort, even a casual or temporary full-time job. So, and that's up to the age of 30. So you're not talking about someone who's a teenager, you know, working part-time for a couple of years. You're talking about someone who's well into adulthood. And this delay in starting their job career is really going to affect them down the road.
Oh, absolutely. The knock-on effects are huge, aren't they? I've got two teenage kids. I'm looking down the barrel of this same scenario. I've got a 20-year-old. I wonder in 10 years' time what he's going to be up to. The knock-on effect are absolutely huge. The housing market, investment. How are these young people going to actually break into that side of life in general?
Well, even if they didn't eat smashed Avo for their entire adult life, they still wouldn't be able to save for a down payment on a house. And what's more, the bank wouldn't give them a mortgage even if they had the down payment, because the bank is never going to lend money to somebody who works from gig to gig.
So what are we going to do about this?
What
are we going to do about this? Is this a government issue they have to step in and make sure that casuals, for example, do get more benefits? Or how do we tackle this, Jim?
Yeah, I think there's responsibility on the part of government, for sure, and a responsibility on the part of employers. I think short-term vision on the part of employers, you know, they think, well, I can save a bit of money. I'll just hire someone when I need them without offering any security. In the long run, I don't think that's the best way to build a company, and it's certainly not the best way to build a society. We definitely need government to step in as well with, I think, a fairly ambitious program to, first of all, strengthen job conditions in the labor market. You know, if people weren't as desperate for work as they are today, if there were more jobs around, as was the case, you know, in the mid-2000s, as we discussed, then workers would have the power to say no to some of these lousy jobs that are on offer. Now, I also think the regulations around work have to be modernized. You know, it's too easy for a company to say, well, I'm not actually the employer. Think of a company like Uber, say, you know, and their drivers, who clearly work for Uber, are paid by Uber, but Uber has used this loophole to avoid any of the responsibilities that come with being an employer. Those kind of loopholes have to be closed off, I think, to give people a fair shot.
Thanks, Jim. We'll let you get back to it. That's Dr. Jim Stanford from the Centre for Future Work at the Australia Institute on the line from Canada. That's why the phone was a bit scratchy. But really interesting points there that Jim made. We do have to look at it. He's talking people, you know, up to the age of 30 are actually finding themselves in this situation. It's not just the youngsters we're talking about, not just the teens and the young university graduates.